This is Sarah Kendall in the Monday Afternoon Show. I'm here with Nick Zakos, and we're about to be joined by Tim McCabe. Tim McCabe is our state entomologist. He's the chief entomologist at the New York State Museum, and he is our state's bug guy. When we have questions about bugs, Tim McCabe is a major resource for us. We asked him to join us today on the show to talk a little bit more about cicadas. Nick and I have had so many dinner table conversations about cicadas, pretty uninformed. So we thought, why don't we inform ourselves and you guys and find out the answer to all of our questions about the 17-year cicada. If you haven't heard about them yet, you probably have heard them. They have just emerged after 17 years with a force in the Hudson Valley. I've heard reports from people all over Columbia County saying that the cicadas have arrived. Here's Tim McCabe, who is the chief entomologist at New York State Museum and our state entomologist.
That's right, New York State Museum. I have a doctorate from Cornell University in entomology. So you've got some expertise here, even though my specialty is Lepidoptera, particularly cutworms. But now we're down to one entomologist here. I'm the state entomologist, and I have to be the general practitioner of entomology.
And what responsibilities go along with being the state entomologist?
Well, on the public side, I do a tremendous amount of extension. That is, people that call in with a bug problem, and they'll go to exterminators, or they might go to and exterminators refer a lot of things to me that they can't identify. So my real special talent is to put names on any insect that you can come up with in New York State.
Wow.
Well, so everyone's talking about cicadas right now, and it's actually something a number of people have requested that we have some more information on the air about cicadas. Maybe for someone listening who has kind of heard the buzz but doesn't, or literally heard their buzz, but doesn't really. Could you give a kind of an introduction to people who don't know what's going on about this brood?
Sure, I can. The 17-year cicada is actually comprised of three species, but in our area, in New York State, we only have one species of 17-year cicada. Close relatives in the same genus, that is Mega cicada, also come in 13-year species groups. And these are mostly in the south where the growing season is much longer than we have so that they can develop much faster than we can given our climate here in the north country. We have several broods that come out in New York State. So we have brood 2 and brood 7 and brood 10 and brood 14. Now, brood 2 is what we're presently experiencing. Where we come up with these brood names is 17 years. Theoretically, there's 17 broods for each year. They would just describe brood 1 through brood 17. Now, of the potential for 17 years worth of broods, there's 3 years that have never had a brood, and of the 17-year cicada, there's one brood that is now extinct. That was a brood that only hatched out in Connecticut.
And what was the cause of that extinction, do we know?
Well, these things are impacted by what we're doing on the surface, or what climate or fires or other things can be doing on the surface. They feed on the roots of trees and shrubs, and if you clear the land and plant wheat or corn or some other crop, then they're no longer there. And if the brood is restricted enough in distribution and perhaps grows over habitat that's quality farmland or land is good for mining or some other purpose where we've gone in and disrupted the landscape, or for that matter where a little bit of change has taken place naturally, rainfalls may have changed a little bit, an exotic plant may have come in and started to be the dominant ground cover, and they're not finding it as adequate a food supply, that can cause a endemic population, as a very localized population, to wink out of existence.
So I want to make sure I totally understand. You were just talking about a different brood for every year of those 17 broods. So what?
Right.
So the brood...
Each of those broods takes 17 years to go from an egg to an adult.
Aha. So we have, because the broods that we have, there's a lot of talk about the 13 year brood and the 17 year brood. Can you talk about the 13 year brood?
Yes, we do not get the 13 year brood. That's only in the southern states. Uh-huh. So New York State only sees the 17 year brood, and there's other cicadas in New York State that shouldn't be confused with the 17 year or so-called periodical cicada. We have, every summer, we get dog day cicadas that usually come in late August, you know, the dog days of summer. And they, you hear them buzzing in the treetops, but these are solitary. Only the periodical cicada in our area gets together in these huge masses and have hundreds of thousands, even tens of thousands, all singing at once from the same tree or the same acre.
Wow.
That makes a lot of sense to me, and that actually tidies up a lot of stuff that's been going through my head for years. Because when I was a kid, my mom used to always tell me that I was born during a cicada year, and I always thought, yeah, well, I kind of hear cicadas every year, and I find little cicada shells every once in a while. They're always all over the place. But just this year, when they've come out, I did the math, and I'm 34 years old, and so she was actually right. I was born during one of the 17-year brood hatches. And
But what time of year were you born?
I was born in the summer. I was born in August.
That's going to be a dog day cicada.
That's the dog day cicadas. But it was
and
still
they
same summer, right?
They come out every year.
They come out every
year.
Sorry,
Nick.
They do.
See, the dog day cicada takes 3 to 4 years to complete its life cycle, and there's multitude of overlapping broods. So every year we hear about the same number of dog day cicadas.
Right.
I want to know about why 17. What is this? What is going on? This is something Nick and I were talking about this morning. How do they know that it's been 17 years? What are some of the cues that bring them out?
Well, it depends on their growing season and how quickly they can develop. And there's some slop. There's some mistakes that are made. Like last year in Mohonk Preserve, Shannon Smiley sent me a picture of brood 2 cicada. One singleton adult then emerged and made a mistake and then emerged a year early. So the system isn't perfect, but the fully mature nymphs in the soil react to the soil temperature. So when the soil temperature gets above a critical point, when they're fully grown as a nymph, then they'll emerge from the soil, and since all of them are in virtually the same vicinity, all reading the soil temperature about the same, their timing is pretty close. Within a few days, if not a few hours of one another, they all emerge.
That's amazing.
We have other types of insects out there, like some mayflies only live a couple hours as an adult, so in the course of a year, they all have to time it to emerge within the same 2 hour span. So what the 17 year cicada does is really not that remarkable compared to what some other insect species are also able to achieve, just using temperature and day length and maybe degree days from when it first started warming up in the spring of the year.
Now, over the course of those 17 years, are they slowly developing every part of that, or is there some kind of natural cue they're waiting for to take the next step and then emerge or do something like that? Or is it a slow process over that whole time span?
Well, because in our area our trees go dormant and the sap stops flowing, they have to go into a winter diapause, and that takes them longer than to develop. It's usually like a second instar nymph. They have 5 instars, and it's the second instar nymph that's getting through the first winter. And if the winter is longer or shorter than usual, it's going to make a difference in how quickly it can develop. So in the south, we have much shorter winters. A lot of the trees don't even go into diapause, and that second instar nymph can grow so much faster that it doesn't have to lose a molt, if you will, to develop. So it can finish in 13 years, whereas ours takes 17 years. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter, they're very slow growing. They're feeding on xylem in the roots of trees. And xylem has very little in the way of nutrients. It's just very watery. So it takes a long and slow period to grow, feeding solely on xylem.
Wow. And are there particular trees that they live off of that they particularly like that xylem, or they find is the best for them, or do you find them in all hardwood or softwood species around?
Yeah, it's virtually all deciduous trees.
Deciduous.
The coniferous trees have terpenes and other toxic things in their bark and in their xylem and phloem that make for very, very poor habitat for cicadas. So generally, like this brood two we have now, it's mostly in the Hudson River Valley, because as you go up into the higher terrain, you get more and more coniferous plants, and they don't do as well, and it's less apt to have a little pocket population of brood two.
Could you talk a little bit about the locations where cicadas are emerging right now specifically? Because we were just reading a little bit about it, about the region changing, that they used to be further north last time.
They will be further north eventually here. As you go further north, it takes a little longer before they emerge because our mean temperatures are a little cooler. Right now we have them emerging. I've had reports of Saugerties and Rhinebeck. So you go down near the New Paltz area, they're out in numbers. But if you get all the way up to Ravenna, which is about as far north in the Hudson River Valley as it gets, they haven't emerged yet. And my records from when the brood was out last time was June 29th, which we haven't come to yet, but I don't know if that was their earliest emergence. It's just when I happened to notice them 17 years ago.
Wow. And the dog day cicadas, that's another question. I myself have been called out for calling them both cicadas and cicadas. Is there a proper pronunciation?
I don't think there is an accepted pronunciation. We always say in entomology, cicadae.
Okay.
But cicada sounds perfectly fine to me.
You say cicadae as a plural or as a singular?
It's usually spelled with an A on the end, and then just add an S to it. So cicada, cicadas.
Cicada, cicadas.
I want to hear more about their sound, because I've been in a couple spots. I've been to one spot, particularly in Germantown, where it is crazy deafening. It is so, so loud. And you mentioned earlier tens of thousands singing from the same tree. Can you talk about that, their sound, their song?
Yeah, it's pretty unusual in that all the cicadas make a quite similar trilling sound. It can differ in that it's sort of a seesaw pulsing with some species. It's extremely steady with others. Some have the sputtering start up, or maybe an end to the song would be a stuttering. In fact, one of the periodical cicadas wasn't even described by science until the year 2000, and it was based on recordings where we could see the amplitude or the pitch was different.
Wow.
And it was a hidden species that hadn't been recognized before.
And you could determine that just from sound without having a visual or an actual specimen?
Yes, you could do it just from sound, but it requires a good ear and a pretty decent shorthand, too, because I've been in the field with cicada workers where they have used, like, X's, T's, and S's in a series to indicate how long the buzz is going on and what amplitude it seems to be. And so cicada workers have developed their own written shorthand to try and duplicate what's happening in the field.
That's fascinating.
Ideally, you go with a high-fidelity recording, but it's not always possible.
Wow.
What is a cicada worker?
A cicada worker, what would we call them? A kinorhynchologist? Well, if they work just on the 17-year cicada, then you might be able to call it a mega cicadologist. We just add ology to anything we want to make it into a science.
That's amazing. Yeah, the other thing I noticed was that it seemed like, I actually was driving down to the city on, I guess it was Friday, and I had to pull over, and just south of Rhinebeck because the noise was so deafening that I wanted to actually experience what was going on there, and I got out. And sure enough, every shrub, every tree just covered in cicadae. And it seemed like not only were there the individual drones going on and off, but there seemed to be a larger pattern that at a certain moment, maybe a lot of them would die off at the exact same moment, and they were kind of in some kind of larger communication, but maybe that was just me perceiving that. Does that happen?
It does happen. I've noticed that, and in some cicadas, it's even more spectacular in that it'll go, it's like a wave. You're probably familiar with like at a football game, and people start to wave, and it'll go all the way around.
Yeah.
I remember being in Belize and hearing cicadas, hundreds of them, right overhead in the treetops, all starting to buzz, and then without me seeing anything flying, it moved down the road until 5 miles away I could finally hear it fading out. So all this time, all these cicadas were sitting in the treetop, and they didn't decide to do this wave until a certain moment, and then it just proceeded right across the canopy in the jungle.
Wow. So cool. We wanted to ask you also, Tim, about cicadas and edibility.
Almost any insect has parts of it, and the bigger body, the better off you are. The muscle is, if you like crayfish or you like shrimp, you're dealing with a very similar type of tissue. About the only thing I've had termites, and people refer to them as being nutty in flavor, and that's pretty close. They have somewhat of a nutty flavor.
We actually, 2 weekends ago, we have a friend who's a pizza connoisseur and has a small pizza truck here in town where he makes pizzas to order, and we collected some cicadas up on the grounds of Olana, one of our historic sites in town, and brought them down, read some internet recipes, boiled, I guess it would be the thorax, took off the wings, legs and head, and cooked them up, and they were surprisingly good. I liked them. And then the interesting note that we got from the friend of ours who owns a pizza truck, who's a real flavor kind of fanatic, and he was tasting it, and he said it tastes like the smell that you get when you cut fresh green wood, which I thought was an interesting observation in light of what you've told us today about what the cicadas eat their entire lives. Which
I'm not sure what I can say about that. A lot of things I know, like animals, bees, you're all familiar with different forms of honey, and that is, you know, whatever they're feeding on. If it's alfalfa, then the honey kind of smells and tastes of alfalfa. If it's dandelion, it smells and tastes of dandelion. So you're probably accurate in saying that, you know, it's a little bit like the trees they're living on. So not too surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you another one of the frequently asked questions I hear in totally uninformed conversations that I've been in a part of about cicadas. People talk about the fact that we hear about the 13-year brood, our 17-year brood, that they're both prime numbers. And then we speculate. Is there any significance about the fact that those two numbers are both prime numbers?
I haven't read anything that has been very definite about why it comes out as prime numbers. There's lots of theories why they take so long to emerge, why their development period is stretched out so far, and that's above and beyond what I suggested earlier about the xylem being a very poor source of nutrients and taking a long time to develop. But by coming out on such an erratic schedule, you're disrupting the predator parasite load, because what bird, what mouse is going to be out there waiting 17 years for the next meal of this sort to come along? So there's some advantage to having a long period between emergences, but that wouldn't really be related to a prime number. It could just be coincidence that it has a prime number, that the ultimate goal for selection was to
And there's no biological cue or anything like that that's tipping them off at 17 years to come out. That's just part of their long development, like you talked about.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, another on my list of FAQs. The first thing I hear when people talk about cicadas is, no, they're not harmful. They're not harmful to humans. Enjoy their emergence. They're not harmful. But I have heard a little bit about fruit trees and potential damage to some of the branches. Can you talk about any of the concerns different people might have about about cicada season?
Well, certainly they like to congregate on a very limited area to do their lekking behavior, and when they lay eggs all in a limited area, that's a lot of eggs. You know, a cicada makes a slight slit in a twig about a pencil diameter and lay about 20 eggs in there. Potentially it can lay about 600 eggs, so it does this 30 times. So just one cicada is going to make 30 slits in this tree, and you've got tens of thousands of them. Still, the trees handle all that unless you're dealing with, like if you're an orchardist and you've planted a lot of young apple trees or a lot of young fruit trees, not being aware that the cicadas are going to emerge on your property that year when the trees are young and trying to make a grow of it. That's not good timing. They can kill a tree under those circumstances. But it's just purely mechanical, and just circumstance has to be just right for them to actually do any damage. A mature tree can easily handle all of this egg-laying activity.
Hmm. You said earlier lekking behavior?
Lekking. I probably shouldn't have used that term. It's zoologists use it to refer to birds, like your turkeys all will come to a certain open glade and do displaying. So it's a congregation for mating rituals. And it seems to me very parallel to the situation we have with a periodical cicada, which they might be a mile away, they hear a congregation starting to sing off in the distance, and they'll fly that way and join the main group. So it's in some ways kind of parallel to lekking behavior that ornithologists recognize with various bird species.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I have to tell you, it is such a cool thing to be able to call our state entomologist and ask you these questions. So we want to thank you so much for joining us. It's a real privilege to have you and your expertise on the air with us. I'm wondering, but while we do have you, because I know you are the chief entomologist at the State Museum in Albany, we're not so far from you. Could you tell us quickly about the State Museum?
Well, I can tell you quite a bit about the research program at the State Museum. You know, we have archaeologists and geologists. Let's see, presently we don't have a botanist, on the research staff. We'll be filling a vacancy there hopefully sometime in the next year. We have one zoologist on staff. Compared to 50 years ago, we're seeing the impact of the recession, and we're rather down to minimal numbers here. So in the old days, we'd have zoologists will travel, but now we don't have enough manpower to accommodate a lot of, if you wanted someone to come to talk to your school group, for instance, it's just not going to happen in modern times. But in historical times, we did stuff like that. We get about 40 or 50 research papers that comes out of our unit every year, so we're very productive that way. Excellent collections. We have many holotypes in various groups. Like we probably have North America's richest collection of gilt fungus in as far as type material goes. We have over 3,000 holotypes of insects. A holotype, I should explain, is a unique individual specimen on which the species is based. So any collection, trying to think of a comparable one, the Cleveland Natural History Museum has, if I remember correctly, has one holotype. And New York State Museum, thanks to its longevity and 35 start, we have about 3,000 insect holotypes alone.
Amazing.
And that doesn't include all the holotypes we have in fungus and botany and paleontology.
Amazing.
So very, very good, very historically important collection.
And that's not a collection that's necessarily open to the public. It's something that we have as a research tool.
Right. Now, the public can come and see it by appointment.
Oh.
And a lot of times parts of the collection goes on exhibit and some of it stays on permanent exhibit, but most of the activity there is mailing specimens to researchers all over the world.
Folks who are listening, we're talking to Tim McCabe right now. He is our state entomologist. He's also the chief entomologist at the New York State Museum in Albany, which we were just talking about. Tim, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
All of our FAQs answered.
This has been very, very,
very
informative. Yeah.
Well, enjoy your cicadas. It's going to be a much better show than Halley's Comet.
Well, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Yep. Bye now.
Thanks, Tim.
Next, we'll hear a song by David Rothenberg. David is a musician, composer, author, and philosopher based here in the Hudson Valley. He's in Cold Spring. Earlier this year, he released a CD of original music made with and out of the sounds of insects called Bug Music, with bugs like cicadas. Here we'll hear two tracks from his album Bug Music. The first, Magicicada Unexpected Road. You'll hear David playing with a cicada chorus. Here he is. Thank you.